All right, so the after the podcast discussion. It's always more interesting after. No, so that was great. That was really great. I think I learned a lot from middle neighborhoods. I know, I feel the shrinking of the middle class. So I feel, you know.
That was a great question.
I think that's a real dynamic. And that's something we're going to have to talk about, is kind of fewer people to fill in those middle places. What does that mean?
Right. Cause my house, to bring back like my middle neighborhood, my house I bought 6 years ago for like under 100,000. It was 98,000. And I live in the city. And right now my house is now worth like 175, because they don't know that I renovated my upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's. So,
but as I ineloquently pointed out, that's a good thing. Although you may be paying more taxes, Kristen, that's a good thing. You want the value of the neighborhood to rise. You don't want it to rise to price you out, but it's a good thing. For many years in Northeast Ohio, the housing prices were very stagnant.
But I'm seeing the dynamic of my neighborhood change, because the houses are going for so much now that I feel the dynamic changing. And I liked, you know, it was very middle class when I was there. And now the dynamic is changing, where I'm seeing more of the affluent come in, or a higher middle class coming in. And I liked my neighborhood.
Well, you're expressing a feeling that, you know, think of all of the folks who've lived in neighborhoods and communities that were long considered undesirable, and over the course of years, you know, decade, gentrified, and they've been driven out of their neighborhood, right? You hear about, you know, people talking how difficult that transition and change is for people and places. And you yourself are expressing what so many people have found frustrating, and not just, oh, I can't live here anymore. It's, oh, this is a different place than when I first moved in. And from the outside, we normally, you know, sort of say, well, that's not a bad thing. And here's good, and bringing new people in. And then you have new businesses, because it's often difficult to relate to how personal that change is for people and communities.
Which brings me back to, like, I know that you don't want to talk about yourself all the time, Dean England, but it brings me back to like your Brooklyn story, which, yes, I know I've heard a bunch of times. I love hearing it every time, but of the neighborhood changed.
Right.
Where you grew up, which is a big reason why you're in the field that you're in right now.
And one of the things that we didn't have was a focus on middle neighborhoods, because the transition in my community was rapid, almost overnight. Imagine if we had a policy that could allow homeowners to stabilize their values. In some places in the country, the neighborhood association or the CDC can almost assure that the value will not go down. They do that through bonding, they do that through a land trust, and they assure the existing homeowners, many of them, you know, in the middle category, that the value won't go down, and that they should stay. Those are important tools that were not available to my community when it happened in 1969. So there's no floor. People got scared. Blockbusting was rife, and there was no policy in view. And so that community was lost, although now it's back and it's a yuppie puppy village. But I lost, and you know this, those community residents or community members that helped me grow up. So that's why I think in visceral terms about middle neighborhoods.
I guess my big thing is that by defining middle neighborhoods and start trying to help middle neighborhoods, is there any way that this could go sour into a redlining again of being like, well, these are middle neighborhoods, this is middle class, this is not, and this is the affluent, and this is, you know, the low income. Is there any way that that could end up being a new, not saying that yours it will, but as a result, you know, we never know until it happens, situation?
I think Malia can speak to this, but my view is something can go south, but it's
okay.
It's gentrification. Mm-hmm. It's inattention to the fact that the residents of these middle-income neighborhoods don't have the wherewithal after public supports for them are put in place to keep their homes. And so it defeats the purpose of a middle-income strategy if the folks that you're meant to help can't even buy the home. So gentrification is always a threat when public support for these neighborhoods are in play.
Yeah. And the opposite policies for what happened when you were in Brooklyn to now is to stabilize existing residents and buffer them from spikes in home prices, right? Yeah. Not just pricing them out, but they may own their home outright and can no longer afford the taxes in the community. Is, you know, there are other policies, 34 some odd states have some type of policy or legislation that caps property value increase for tax purposes to preserve home ownership in vulnerable communities. So you talk about gentrification, you may have, you know, somebody, it's great that your house went from 98 to 178. For somebody else, especially folks, you know, fixed income, can't afford that increase. And you think, well, you just potentially doubled your asset, but they can't pay now the annual tax bill on that and, you know, may lose their community, their residents where they've lived for a long time. And so providing some type of ability for them to have a, you know, maybe a 3% or a 5% cap on the increase in not the overall value for the market, but what they're taxed at to keep, you know, longtime residents in their communities and to, in some ways, not prevent, but slow gentrification or at least balance that influx, you know, helps other folks keep those places recognizable to long-term residents, like you were just saying, that change.
Right. And that's what I'm nervous about is I have got two neighbors that are on fixed income and I'm nervous about what they're, you know, what's going to happen, because what I love about them is that they are both retired and they know everything about what's going on the street.
Yeah.
And they watch out for, they literally watch out. These two women watch out for everybody on the street. Mm-hmm. They know the comings and goings, you know, they knew that when my dad got a new car, cause he was babysitting my son, and they were like, did he get a new car? Cause I saw someone babysitting and I thought it was him. I just wanted to make sure. I'm like, yeah, everything's fine.
That's right out of Jane Jacobs and What Makes the Life of a Great City. In your case, a great community. The fact that those individuals are held harmless and they can stay for the rest of their days, they are contributing to the community in ways that we don't capture normally in statistics. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or in ways that we don't capture, right, in normal statistics in these measurable ways, but are certainly captured in the why you choose to live there and why that's you would, right, you know, pick a neighborhood and spend, you know, and spend your money. And realtors can tell you that.
Yeah.
Sort of economic data doesn't tell you that. And we have to find that balance. I think, you know, the research that we're trying to do is to find that policy balance of saying, you know, what matters with people and place.
This is better than the podcast.
It always is, which is what I was going to tell
but
Bob.
But we're recording this.
We're still recording. What I was going to tell Bob is to cut out the end and get rid of that and just let's just keep it going.
Well, why don't we just call it the after podcast and publish it?
It's the like after podcast. We keep talking about stuff.
That was a rich discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't know if I wanted to mention my amazing neighbors, but what I wanted to say about that type of research, for those that are interested, yeah, what is why, you know, there's the quantitative and then there's the qualitative data of, you know, finding the things that stats is not going to show us.
Yeah. We're doing both.
Just why, you know.
That's the unique part of the study. you know, we pushed us or are pushing ourselves to say it's beyond just the data, which, you know, it's very important. But what is it about the core essence of middle neighborhoods that we ought to support them, know about them, and value them, which, you know, we don't at the moment? So to say, your community should be able to continue without outside support just because of how we put communities into the American system, the ecosystem. Well, it doesn't work that way. Everything needs to be tendered and watered. And why not communities?
Yeah.
I just feel like the middle class is just being ignored at this point. You know, we're only talking about tax breaks for the rich, and we're talking about how we can help people who are impoverished. And then the whole middle class is like, you guys just keep sailing on with whatever it is you're doing.
Well, I think, so if I can make a broader statement of things going on, right, politically, policy-wise, I think we are missing the middle in everything. We're missing middle ground. We're missing middle places. We're missing that people are in the middle. They're not all just, you know, black and white in terms of policy and beliefs and their stance on things, where they live or how they live. There's this whole idea, I think, right now in American society of the missing middle. And, you know, that has led us to not just pressures on middle income, but great divides in places, in politics, in personal lives. So, you know, I would argue that we have to get back to the middle in a lot of ways.
I agree.
Yeah, this is a very interesting discussion for the future. Why is it that we have lost the middle? I mean, I can think of so many reasons why. But none of them add up to the, explains 90% of the variance, so to speak.
Right. I like this idea of missing middle. It's like a polarization that we're in right now.
There's not a lot of space for people in the middle either, for middle ground.
No. That's very problematic. I mentioned this before, for our democracy, because our democracy is built on the middle class. We don't go to the extreme. Again, it's called American exceptionalism, because in many countries around the world, power and income and wealth are solely divided by the classes that you're situated in. America has been the exception to that, is that there's a fluidity of class and class opportunity. Well, that's not the case as much as it was, say, before World War II. And the inability to be fluid and for folks to get from one class to the next, is income class, I should say, is problematic.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Very much.
I agree.
Okay. So all we've got a lot to tackle in our next one then, Jean England.
Yeah, we've got more conversation about this. If anyone is interested in more about this, just contact us at the college.
That's a tall order.
That's a tall order. All right. Well, thanks again. For anybody who was interested in the after podcast conversation, that was it.